So the deal was done, but without nailing down just how much money was on offer. The Prime Minister Boris Johnson came and went yesterday, and still there was no hint about the funding that many thought would be made available to sort out Northern Ireland's many problems. These are issues, of course, like health, education and welfare reform. And then last night we heard from the Finance Minister, Conor Murphy. He said that what was on the table is simply not nearly enough. Let's speak to our political correspondent, Enda McClafferty. Good morning to you, Enda.
Good morning, Vinny.
Let's talk money. Of course, the PM said when he was here yesterday, this is not about money, but leadership. Clearly, he meant it.
That's for sure, Vinny, and we understand the financial package put on the table last night for Conor Murphy amounted to around £2 billion. Now, we don't know the breakdown of that, how much of that was going to be new money, how much of that was going to be extra powers for borrowing money, how much of it was going to be part of the Barnett consequentials, because we know that the London government is planning a big infrastructure investment. Northern Ireland was going to be getting some of that money anyway down the track, so we don't know if that has been factored in, nor do we know, Vinny, over what time span we're talking about in terms of how that money was going to be fed into the executive for spending in Northern Ireland. There was some suggestion during the discussion that 5 years had been mentioned, but as yet we've had no confirmation around that. And that's important, Vinny, because as Conor Murphy referenced and Arlene Foster referenced yesterday, this is all about rolling spending, because whenever they bring pay parity back for the nurses in Northern Ireland, which we're expecting to hear about today, and we also know there's teachers' pay to be dealt with, those are going to be rolling costs from year to year. So it's not a case of getting a one-off lump sum to sort those problems out. So we're waiting, I suppose, to get the finer detail of what exactly this package amounts to, but the overall figure was set at £2 billion, and we should get more information after the executive meets. They're meeting around now, and we should get more information whenever the assembly sits later this morning.
Yeah. So speculation before was that we needed around £2 billion. So can we say that this might be all new money? Of course, through the Barnett formula, we already get £10 billion, so this, you know, some of this money, I mean, not all new money, some of this money is basically already been promised. So therefore, this is, might be some of the frustration that we're hearing through Conor Murphy.
Yeah, some of this money, I would imagine, is new cash. But it was interesting, Boris Johnson yesterday did mention Barnett consequentials whenever he was questioned by the media in the Great Hall yesterday. So you can expect this to be a package, if you like, a mix-mash of everything amounting to that figure. But it is, I suppose, in the party's eyes, a long way short of what's needed. Conor Murphy, we know, had his team working over the weekend to do their calculation and all the promises that were laid out in the government's document, the new deal that was put on the table, just to see exactly what was needed in order to finance what was pledged there. And he obviously came out with a very different figure than the one that he received yesterday from Julian Smith. But that said, Vinny, Conor Murphy was never going to go in there, get a figure from Julian Smith and say, thanks very much, Julian, that'll do nicely.
You think
because
he's
this
just
is a part of a horse.
This is all his bargaining. He planned to do this, don't go in and agree the first offer.
Absolutely. That's the way horse trading works. And whenever you are in the position that Conor Murphy is in now, you're going to squeeze the government for as much as you can, because this is a success story for the government. We saw that yesterday with the big photo call up at Stormont. And now is the opportunity for Conor Murphy and the executive to put the big sell on, if you like, to try and get as much cash as possible. But so you can expect a bit of horse trading over the next few weeks to see if they can get this figure increased.
Has the horse bolted, though? You know, what happens if they don't accept? Surely negotiations are over. They've done what Julian Smith wanted them to do. They've gone back in. The executive is back up and running, and therefore, or, you know, they can complain all they want. Do they have to give them more money?
Well, that is the problem for the parties, because the leverage, as far as they're concerned, has gone essentially, because the government knows that they're not going to walk back out of Stormont again if they don't get the cash that they need. So Julian Smith and the government might think that they're in a better position right now. Against that, of course, the parties are now singing off the same hymn sheet. They will point to those commitments in black and white in that deal produced by both governments to say, look, there it is. This was a commitment that you made, not verbally, but black and white in writing. And these are the commitments you have to stand hand over. But the other consideration, of course, we mustn't forget for the government is the fact that they know that both Scotland and Wales will be looking very, very closely to see the money that's coming to Northern Ireland, because under the Barnett formula, there has to be a distribution of funds reflective of the respective populations, and they will be seeing how the government siphon this cash off to Belfast without having to do the same for Scotland and Wales.
And a columnist in the Belfast Telegraph today suggesting that what's actually needed is around $5 billion, which is a totally different figure again. What is the incentive for Westminster to up their offer?
Well, I think it is, I suppose, to keep the parties in Northern Ireland on track to make sure that they're able to deliver what's been promised in that document, because it is in the government's interest now to make the executive sustainable. They do want to arrive in a situation further down the track where things start to turn sour again in Northern Ireland. And if the parties come under pressure by way of the amount of money they have to spend to increase public services, well, that will obviously will add tension. It'll put them in a difficult position. You might see situations around the executive table where there's a bit of a scramble for cash. That might reflect badly on some ministers. You might see the two parties, if you like, coalescing, and other executive ministers around the table feeling a bit of a cold shoulder. So you can see how divisive it can be when it comes down to a shortage of cash. We saw that in the past, Vinnie, and the government, I think, will be doing all it can to ensure that Stormont is back and is now back for good. And a very key part of that equation is ensuring that Stormont has the finances necessary to put public services back in Northern Ireland to where they should be, because we're hearing it every day now about the amount of money that's needed to fix things. Yeah. The health waiting list, for instance, we're talking about a figure there of between 700 million and 1 billion to rectify what is a crisis higher than anywhere else in the UK, essentially. And we also know waterworks, we're hearing about it this morning, sewage treatment plants, 99, we're told, right across Northern Ireland, not up to scratch. It's going to take £2 billion to rectify that predicament. We also know, of course, about the welfare payments coming down the track, that mitigation pot has to be topped up once more. So there are a lot of pressures coming for our politicians here, and they need the cash to deal with them. And London knows that as well. So their intent, and I think the government here in Northern Ireland will be ensuring that whatever they get from London is enough to satisfy the high expectations that have been raised over the course of the past week or so with this deal that's been put on the table.
Enda, always a pleasure. That's Enda McLafferty, our political correspondent. 030 30 80 55 55. We'll come to your calls in just a moment. First, though, the economist, Paul Gosling. Good morning to you, Paul.
Morning, Vinnie.
You hear there from Enda suggesting this money might be around the $2 billion. What do you make of that?
Well, clearly, and you referenced the fact that Esmond Burney in today's Belfast Telegraph thinks that it might need $5 billion. I mean, a lot of this money will be needed over a period of years. And I think the key important thing to recognise is that the British and also the Irish governments are not going to put money in without a promise and a commitment and an implementation of fundamental reform to the way Northern Ireland works. I'll give you a couple of examples. I mean, firstly, you could argue that there's perhaps one hospital too many in Belfast, but you can't simply close a hospital. You need to do lots of things to change the way services are provided. That costs a lot of money. But basically, there's no point simply pouring money into a system that doesn't work very well. So I think we'll be very closely connected, any additional money, to changing the way things work here. And it's the same with schools. I mean, you see in the new decade, new approach deal, a commitment to changing away from segregated schooling towards integrated schooling, where children from all backgrounds are educated together in the classroom. That creates savings by, you know, closing a number of schools. But it will be a painful process.
A long process.
And that's right. It will take several years. Absolutely.
Okay, well, you're an economist. Let's get you to put your money where your mouth is, Paul Gosling. And what do you think that we need? And if you were to put a time frame, I'm not expecting a specific one, what would that be? Over how long?
I think we're talking a 10 to 20 year process to fundamentally reform the way Northern Ireland works. And you're talking about, you know, one or two billion up front, but you need several hundreds of millions per year to continue to implement fundamental reform. And I'll give you an example, Vinny. I mean, the Alliance Party says that it costs us around between 750 million and 1.5 billion pounds a year to provide segregation in our public services. Now, that's the type of saving you want to achieve, but you can't do that instantly. It takes a number of years, and it means that you have to change things fundamentally. And one of the objectives is to get our economy to work better, so you increase the revenues, you know, so that you increase the rates revenue, and also for the UK, you increase the tax revenues.
So you throw the likes of uncertainty of Brexit into that, and you look at, we've mentioned the Barnett formula already this morning. Like, what are the chances of us actually getting enough money to do what we need to do?
Well, we have to. I mean, that's where we have to get to. I mean, we can't carry on as we are. I mean, we've got a society that's fundamentally split. That's unhealthy. And we're wasting too much
money.
But
we're also part of the UK and other parts of the UK, Scotland and Wales, you know, they might not be that happy with us getting money above and beyond what the Barnett formula says that we should. So why would Westminster want to do that and annoy the rest of the UK?
Because there is an objective there to get Northern Ireland society to operate in a more economic and efficient way. I mean, you know, if you're wasting, say, £1 billion a year just by duplicating services because we've got the traditions of different traditions of religion in Northern Ireland, I mean, that's a fundamentally wasteful approach and is an unhealthy approach because it creates social division. So we have to address these things. And, you know, you've got elements of sectarianism within Scotland, but it's not anywhere near the same problem in Scotland or Wales that we've got in Northern Ireland. And in any case, the UK government has a responsibility, you know, because Northern Ireland has never been a viable state for many, many years. And, you know, it was under direct rule for many years. We had the troubles. So I think the UK government and also the Scottish and Welsh devolved governments will recognise that Northern Ireland is a different situation from the one they've got. But I think there's a complete intolerance towards the idea of spending things like the Social Investment Fund, you know, SIFT. I think there's a sense that we can't simply waste money in the future. We need to make sure that money is used efficiently.
Okay. You mentioned a number of major areas where changes are needed in Northern Ireland, Paul. Do you believe that our politicians are capable of leading us through that?
Not if they're left to their own devices, no. And I think that's why the British and also the Irish government have pulled together, along with the parties, you know, such a detailed shopping list of what needs to be done. And so I think the money will be very closely tied into making the changes that lots of us would recognise have to be made.
OK, let's go to the phones. If you can stay for a moment, Paul, please. That's Jane. Sure. Jane, first call of the day. Good morning to you, Jane. Go ahead.
Good morning, Vinnie.
Good morning.
This is a total mess. Total chaotic. Arlene Foster has presided over this, and we saw the RHI scandal, and now we see what we would call this. She couldn't negotiate the financial terms. She couldn't get herself out of a paper bag.
But the five parties have gone into this. They all went in without specifics of that money. Yesterday, last night, when Conor Murphy got that figure and then came out and said this is simply not enough.
With respect, Vinnie, the Sinn Féiners don't care what happens. They're not interested. Arlene Foster was
I'm sure they would disagree. Like,
well, they can disagree if they like.
Why would they go back into government if they don't care, if they're not interested?
It's not going to work. And they know it's not going to work. As Jim Allister has said so often and so wisely, they don't want it to work. You know, or I know they don't want it to work. Arlene Foster was so keen to get First Minister, the office of First Minister again, that she would have done anything under the sun.
And what about the other parties that went back
well,
in that agreed?
They don't have a lot of input, really. They don't, really. The two big parties, Arlene was so keen to get back, she would have sold her soul to get back.
Well, I'm sure she would disagree with that.
She would disagree, yes, but she doesn't agree with anybody. She came over last night on the television flaming mad because she has been exposed for her inefficiency.
We heard Jane from different parties on this program over recent months that, you know, that they're being told on the doorstep that the people that vote for them, they want them to get back into power. They want them to get that executive back up and running.
The deal she got is not good. Last week and the week before, we had the nurses out on strike. Now,
but you keep referring to the deal that Arlene Foster got, but of course
Arlene was one of the king.
Of course she was,
members.
But she was not alone.
She was supported by the Sinn Féin, who don't want Northern Ireland.
They were all
Ireland
in there. They were,
they
all, but they, the five main parties were all in those talks.
They're only tiptoeing along. They have no real input. It was the two parties, the DUP and the Sinn Féin, that got them back into government. It wasn't the other. The Unionist Party has nearly been obliterated.
Okay, Jane, thank you. Gary next. Good morning, Gary.
Sorry, hello, Evanette.
Good morning.
I would just like to say this whole thing's a disaster, just like that last caller said. It's a disaster, totally.
Are you happy that the executive is back up and running?
No.
Why?
No, because it won't work. It'll last a week or two. Nobody's fault. It's just it's designed.
So what did you want? What would your option have been, Gary?
Well, for a start off, we need to do away with these argifiers, as I would call them, both parties. Anybody that wants to go into the Assembly to spend their time arguing and fighting, they need to do away with this MPs and all this and bring in professional people to run this country for about 50 years. And maybe run the show.
Are you talking about civil servants? Are you talking about direct rule from Westminster?
Well, no, not even direct rule. Take a 50-year... Well, direct rule from the point of view that England would supply the money. They're behind this. They caused this problem away 100 years ago.
How do you feel about the fact they went back in without having that financial package, that figure completely nailed down? Was that the right move?
That's right. They haven't. They don't even know. England's already withdrawing the money. There's no... Look at Boris Johnson yesterday.
Well, Boris Johnson said yesterday it's not about the money, it's about leadership, Gary. They were his words.
The whole system's a complete mess. And can you imagine, on the final thing I'm going to say here, I have to say this, I'm a one-time Catholic. That's beside the point, but I resent... And I said this, I was on your show.
Sorry, Gary, I should know. What does that mean? You're a one-time Catholic?
I was a Catholic one time.
Oh, right, sorry.
It doesn't say I'm
sorry,
a national.
Sorry, Gary. That went over my head. Apologies.
I resent the lack of Simon Coveney and Julian Smith, well, especially Simon Coveney, coming into my country to threaten us and blackmail us. And now they've outmaneuvered us. What are they doing in my country anyway? What they need to do is do away with all these guys who are sitting in the Assembly with big money and haven't worked for the past 3 years. They're putting on a good show now, but they were forced back in again. They were forced to browbeat.
You think that the possibility of that Assembly election is what brought them back?
They want to bring in professional people to run the country for 50 years, and all these people in the Assembly, by that time, they'll all be dead, including myself.
Paul Gosling, we'll come back to you for a moment. The executive, of course, has that raft of issues. We've mentioned many of them already this morning that they have to tackle. But if it doesn't get the money that it's expecting, it's going to have to review its priorities. So how do they start to do that? At a time where they need more money, they then need to look at what they were going to spend and try and make cuts.
Yeah, I mean, we've got a series of really important ministerial meetings coming up, I think, as the new ministers come in and try to get to grips with really challenging situations. And they just have to work through what money they can get, where they can get it from. I mean, some of it will perhaps be borrowed money. Some of it will be capital money that, for big projects, which they will need to spend as quickly as they can. But, I mean, there are serious constraints in terms of actually getting things done. I mean, for example, you can't instantly just wave a wand, spend money and eliminate the waiting list in the health service.
No, but one way that Robin Swan, the new health minister, what he might be able to do is to change the pay parity issue that we've had the health strikes linked to, of course, and that's something I think he'll be addressing today.
Absolutely. But dealing with the waiting list, I mean, that is the simple matter, sorting out the pay dispute. But dealing with the waiting lists, I mean, and the document refers to actually eliminating the longer waiting list within a fairly short period of time. That is going to be really challenging on a practical level and probably means spending quite a lot of money in the private sector. And the private sector doesn't necessarily have the facilities in Northern Ireland to meet that additional demand. So there's a lot of practical issues, and it's just going to have to be people sitting down and working through planning about how to achieve this and also to make savings where they can from some of the existing expenditure.
Paul Gosling, thank you very much. Let's go back to the phones. Frieda, good morning to you.
Good morning, Benny.
How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. And yourself?
I'm all right. Go ahead.
Yes, Benny. Just thinking, you know, how much money do they really need in Northern Ireland? Because so much money gets into Northern Ireland, so much money wasted, and so much money across community projects and things like that that could be used in the health service. the health service is in dire straits at the minute, and that should be priority. But
there's issues here, Frieda, as well. We've got the welfare mitigation, we have the likes of infrastructure, the issues with the roads, with the water service and sewage, etc. There's a lot of things on that list. And then you look at this huge mountain of health waiting lists that seems to get bigger by the day. You know, there are serious things that need addressed, and unfortunately,
absolutely,
money is what is often needed to fix that.
Of course, I agree 100%, Benny, but so much money has been wasted that could have gone into these projects that have been, in our opinion, wasted. So many projects, so many accounts in past years that money has gone into and buildings are put up, and yet they can't. No one knows where this money's gone. There was a programme on television, there was two programmes on, actually, about money that went into Sinn Féin accounts, and they couldn't ever get to the bottom of it. There's so much money, and so much money that has got fraudulently, people doing the double and things like that. And the moral of the story is, you know, for every pound that they get fraudulently, they will lose four times that amount. And I think it's about time they put money into the health service, number one, and the priority things, yes, but let all these cross-community things go to the one side and save money for better projects.
So cross-community projects that cost money, you think, given the history of Northern Ireland, we should still set them aside?
Yes.
Do you think that we still need some help here in terms of the cross-community relationship?
Not at all. No, we do not.
You don't think?
No.
There's no divisions?
Well, if there's divisions, there'll always be divisions. It's just like that. And I think, no, leave those, get the priorities sorted out of the waiting list and the hospitals and health service, definitely. There's so many people in dire straits waiting for operations and money being wasted all over the years. As more money has gone into Northern Ireland than in any other country in the world. It's ridiculous.
Well, I'm not quite sure that's exactly accurate, but I understand the point you're trying to make. Yes. Frieda, thank you.
But
let's go to...
It's funny, sitting getting money all those for three full years. Why not those instead of sitting get money, why not give half their salary into the health service? And that would help quite a bit.
Okay, Frieda, thank you. Fra, next. Good morning, Fra.
Morning, Vinny.
Fra, do you think this fight for money might unify our executive, bring people together? Common cause?
I don't think there is any real unity there, because I don't believe that there's any real government. There may be a programme for government, which is everybody buys into. There's a possibility that you could have this joint up kind of communication between the different departments. Part of one of the major problems maybe was before was, I know people talk about like ring fencing money, but I think the departments were ring fencing the money for themselves. So Sinn Féin had pet projects, if we could call them, out of the DUP, wanted to fund certain things within society, that's where it went. There was no adult joined up communication between the departments, which is what you need. If you have
money for each department is spent within each department, and at the end of the year, the name of it has left me. If there is extra money there, then that's used to kind of move around the system.
Yes, I understand all that, but I'm just trying to make the point that I believe that people in government, it's not a coalition of the willing, et cetera, et cetera. It's people that are, you know, doing what I believe they believe is in the best interest of their party or their community. But Vinny, one or two things I wanted to make a quickly point about. I wanted to say that, you know, there is no magic money tree. If this money is hopefully going to be found going forward, it just proves that austerity is not an economic necessity. It's a political ideology, and I think that what Boris Johnson and the Westminster Parliament will do is drip feed money to the Northern Ireland Executive just in order to keep it on life support going forward and to have what I believe is an illusion of the democratic process.
So Fra, do you mean that the money that comes with this deal, do you think it will be something that comes over a long period of time and we won't see it all in a lump sum?
Yes, I'm not glad to see Stormont back. I would have preferred to have direct rule, because I believe that's the only true way to change things on the ground, because there's too much division going forward, which is why I endorse what Paul Gosling said. I think the money has to come in over 5 years, possibly 10. And I don't mean we're going to give you 2 billion over 10 years. I mean 2 billion now plus this sustainability, but whether or not we're going to get that completely separate. But you see, one of the things that brought down Stormont before, Vinny, was things like double jobbing, RHI and all the scandals. I have a question for, I think it's Naomi Long, the leader of the Alliance Party. If she is going to become the Justice Minister, or is the Justice Minister in the Assembly, she's also an MEP. Alliance stood on a platform.
She's not an MP. She's not an MEP anymore.
Oh, is she not? Okay, well, I withdraw that then. I thought she was still... Is somebody else in the party taking over that role?
I'm not sure. I'll look into that.
Yes, because I was under the impression that she was still an MEP and she was going to be the Minister for Justice. I thought that was still the job. But if that's not the case, then I'll withdraw that because I hadn't heard...
No problem.
...there'd been a change there, but...
No problem. Fra, thank you. Thomas in Antrim next. Good morning, Thomas.
I would advocate, Vinny, to give them no extra money because they have proved over the last 22 years they have not spent it well. 21% more funding than any other region of the United Kingdom, and yet we are maybe 10 or 15 years behind the rest of the United Kingdom with regard to public services.
So, given what you've just said, how far behind you think we are, you think we can fix that by having less money?
If they prove, they're getting more money than anybody else. If they prove they can spend it well, I hope that Boris Johnson brings them extra money on a drip, on a case-by-case basis, once they prove they can govern the country with common sense. If you give them another big wallop of money, nothing's going to change.
And also, you're talking about giving them, this is us. You know, this is people that are on the waiting list, for example. The people that are in poor health that might benefit from that money, might bring their treatment that bit closer, that bit quicker. You get sick tomorrow, I get sick tomorrow, it might make waiting list a little bit shorter.
Politicians are paid to make hard decisions, and those hard decisions have to be made to prioritise health and take the money from somewhere else.
Okay.
If that puts an MLA under pressure, okay, he thinks he's going to get unelected, that is what politicians are paid for, hard decisions.
Thomas, thank you. Mickey and Marty will come to you in just a moment. Mickey in West Belfast. Good morning, Mickey.
Morning, Tony. How are you doing?
I'm all right. Go ahead.
Listen, I think Boris Johnson has put the money on the table and said, that's what you're getting. See the rest, make it up yourself. Get together, do what you have to do to get the money together. Like bring prescription charges and water charges, things to get.
You'd be happy to pay that?
I'd pay prescription cards, of course I would. So you can buy a pack of tablets in the shop anyway for £1 or 89p, whatever. You know, it all depends what you need.
And of course, when it comes to prescription, you know, we're lucky here we have that, but in terms of the money that's needed, it's a drop in the ocean.
Yeah, of course it is. But the same thing too, you have infrastructure. You spend thousands of pounds on a new road, and the next morning some gas company or electric company is digging it up to put a pipe in, and it's ruined again. So they're not talking to each other about what they're doing and what they're going to do, and nobody else is fixing anything.
Mickey, thank you. Marty Adams, next. Good morning, Marty.
Morning, Vinny. How are you?
Not too bad, Marty. You're part of Survivors Together. What do you make of this news? And I guess it looks like they didn't nail down that money. That financial figure that's come out now has surprised a lot of them.
Well, you know, I have to say, on behalf of victims of historical abuse, you know, we can't fault the Secretary of State for what he done for us. You know, he stood up to the plate and he delivered justice for victims of historical abuse. But I'm just looking at the wider political scene here and wondering, you know, when Boris Johnson said yesterday about the hand of history, is this the hand of history that when he came to the DUP conference and promised the world and backtracked? Is it that hand of history we're seeing?
I have no idea. It's a question I guess you'll have to make to Boris Johnson.
Because what I see here is, I see, you know, there was an emergency, and I agree Stormont needs to be up and running. I agree with that, you know, and at what cost is entirely up to the politicians. But I see that this government is going to be unsustainable. We have the likes of RHI coming up. You know, Arlene Foster, you know, I'm a unionist. I'm a unionist through and through, but I do not believe for one minute, and I'm looking at public perception out there, that Arlene is the one to lead this party, to regroup and re-energise the party. Too much has happened, and too much is coming. Now that Stormont's up and running, what are we going to do if she's bruised and battered over RHI?
Well, we don't know, and let's not assume the outcome of that, preempt what will come out of that actual inquiry. Marty, thank you. Right, earlier I was speaking to Henry Hill from Conservative home last night, he tweeted, "What fools were the DUP to trust Boris Johnson?" laughed the other parties as they marched into Stormont to claim the big pot of gold the Prime Minister had definitely put there. I asked him what point he was trying to make.
Well, I just think it was slightly, you've got to laugh or cry, haven't you? The DUP have been absolutely pilloried in the wake of, even before the breakup of the confidence and supply agreement with the government, for ever trusting the Conservative Party. And you've had, you know, that Edward Carson quote has been trotted out. And then it was just, I just found it funny that basically all of these other parties had apparently just then believed the Prime Minister in order to get Stormont over the line. And then, you know, less than, what, a day, 2 days after this apparent breakthrough, were already complaining that actually the money they'd been promised wasn't there, and there were already problems. And it just sort of, I kind of encapsulated that in the tweet.
But of course, and in this deal, those five main parties, they have all gone in with that trust for Boris Johnson, including the DUP. So not just the other four, the DUP are there as well.
Oh, well, I mean, you know, fool me once, shame on you, fool me twice. But I'm not in the negotiation, so I don't know exactly what the discrepancy is. You know, was this the Prime Minister or Julian Smith in the Prime Minister's name making an explicit offer of financial package X and then just straight up not delivering
okay.
it? Is this, yeah.
Well, did the parties have much other option than to go in? The implications were that this deal would see some major issues in Northern Ireland sorted, the likes of health, the current pay dispute and the waiting lists. For example, they would be sorted as a result of this deal, which obviously then relies on money. So if they said no to the deal, they were facing a possible Assembly election and also being blamed for not trying to rectify those health issues. One example among many.
Well, I think it depends on which party you are. Certainly the big two had every reason to worry about an Assembly election. But I think one of the things that slightly frustrates me about this whole arrangement is the fact that it's really vindicated, if you like, the Northern Irish Office strategy of not dealing with these things themselves. Because one of the reasons that Northern Ireland, you know, some of these problems have built up to be so acute is that under not only Julian Smith, but also Karen Bradley and James Brokenshire, the Northern Irish Office has refused to take action. It has deliberately operated an absolutely minimal strategy and left Northern Ireland without a government for 3 years. Now, maybe it would be challenging to do this if you were a nationalist party, but certainly if you're the DUP and the UUP, I think there is a perfectly cogent case to be made to try and sort of put the spotlight back onto Julian Smith, back onto the Northern Irish Office, and say, look, if these issues are so pressing, why? Given that, you know, the United Kingdom government is ultimately responsible for Northern Ireland, why have you not taken action?
It did not work throughout those negotiations, though. That pressure was still very much heaped upon the parties. I produce and present this programme and have for quite a while, and in recent days and weeks and months, that's what we've heard from people calling this show saying, get back at it, we want you to sort out those really important issues that are key to us, like health.
Absolutely. The tweet that I made was not a criticism particularly of one side or the other. I don't want it to be taken as a defence of the Secretary of State or of Boris Johnson. You know, it's a perfectly legitimate criticism. It was more just a kind of resigned, you know, laughing into the void, if you like, that we've been at this for 3 years. And, you know, all of that optimistic talk a couple of days ago, and we're already back here, we're already back into dissatisfaction, we're already back into wrangling about money,
okay.
And it didn't even last week.
And do you think that those parties, were they naive to go back in? Some say very quickly, of course some will then say, well, it's been 3 years, but to go back in until that money was actually completely tied down?
Well, I mean, as I said, I have not been inside the negotiations, so I can't speak to exactly what has been going on. But certainly, I think that if you have spent the last couple of years, you know, criticising the DUP, oh, I can't speak for the DUP, but if you spent the last couple of years criticising the DUP for being too quick to believe London's promises, then I do think that there is it does behove you not to be too quick to believe Julian Smith yourself.
I guess, though, there must have been some serious conversations going on. There must have been some specifics in terms of money and finances and what was capable. Otherwise, they were totally misleading the parties. And I'm sure that wasn't the case.
Well, this is precisely why I'm hesitant to pronounce very specifically on what's been said, because, of course, it could be the fact that, you know, we can't rule out the fact that, you know, London has said X is available, and then Sinn Féin, which, you know, has no reason to make to want Westminster or the British government to come out in a good light, has come out and said that actually we were promised why. You know, it makes sense. There's a case to be made that, you know, either side could be fudging the truth a little bit here. I do think that it's, you know, given that some of the parties, especially Sinn Féin and the DUP, were at this point quite desperate to get the Assembly back on its feet, you could say that they might have accepted the deal that was available and then, you know, tried to, in order to get back into Stormont and avoid an election, and then now are trying to blame the British government for not having as much money as they might like. But we can't, without being in the room or seeing
and I understand
concrete
that.
Evidence of the other, of the evidence, we can't know.
Well, do you believe the government can be trusted?
Do I believe the government can be trusted?
Yeah.
It depends. I think that Boris Johnson did...
Politician's answer.
For me, Boris Johnson did basically just deceive the DUP about his opposition to a border in the Irish Sea. So I think that on that issue, he certainly hasn't proven himself trustworthy. I think that in the broader picture, it still remains to be seen. You know, the government has only been in place for not all that long. The institutional role of the Northern Irish office is a bit different to that of the Prime Minister. So on institutional issues, it could be different. But, you know, I think certainly Boris Johnson, if he wants to build trust, he hasn't got off to the right start by completely contradicting his leadership campaign on the question of a border in the Irish Sea.
OK, Henry Hill, thank you very much. 03030 80 55 55 on the line now, commentators Patricia McBride and Sam McBride, no relation. Good morning to you both.
Good morning,
Sam, we'll start with you if that's all right. I'm reading your article in the newsletter today. Clumsy clash over cash reveals how vulnerable this executive will be. Is it possible that simply negotiations are still ongoing and this is what would have happened regardless?
Well, clearly, if negotiations are not still ongoing, it's very bad news for the executive, because it would mean that simply there was no money coming. I think that there will definitely be talks still ongoing. It's not in anybody's interests from either the government side or from the executive side that this issue is not resolved pretty speedily. But I think that it has exposed pretty fundamental questions about this executive within 48 hours of it being formed. We have this deal document of 62 pages with a really remarkable wish list of everything from funding IVF treatments to building roads to Ulster Scots and Irish commissioners to translation in the Assembly. So many elements of this, and there are no figures beside any of these things. And yet in this same document, it gives a pledge to the people of Northern Ireland and tries to persuade them that this is a new dawn in terms of how Stormont approaches public spending. And it talks about greater transparency, giving people clear information on what will be delivered with taxpayers' and ratepayers' money, and where the executive is seeking to raise additional revenue, it must be clear what service improvements and investments will be funded with that money. Now, in this document, there is no commitment to that element of what the agreement says. So nobody has been asking, as far as I have heard, for simultaneous Ulster Scots translation in the Assembly chamber. I've literally not heard anybody, not even Nelson McCausland, asking publicly for that. And yet that is thrown in here seemingly as a political fig leaf for the DUP because they're agreeing to elements on the Irish language. And what it costs, who pays for it, nobody seemed to be too worried about that last week. Suddenly we get to 2 days after the executive has been formed and we realise actually who is going to fund this. I mean, it's really elementary stuff and I think pretty alarming for anybody in Northern Ireland who was hoping that this was going to be a genuine new dawn if this isn't sorted very, very quickly within a couple of days.
Yeah, it is possible that there were concerns there, Sam McBride, but they didn't feel like they had much option. You know, the Secretary of State had said the 13th of January Assembly election, and that was something that they wanted to avoid. And then, of course, the document was published, so you know that, I guess, took away a little bit of control around the negotiations from the parties.
Well, I think that in the short term, for some of these parties, avoiding an election is clearly in their self-interest. But is that in the public interest? And actually, is it in their long-term interest? It might be expedient in the short term, but if they go back in, and they genuinely, and we're still a little bit in the dark about this, but if they genuinely haven't tied down the British government as to what it is paying for, how it's paying for it, what elements of Stormont are going to have to raise their own revenue. And we had fascinating comments on your programme yesterday from Edwin Poots, who was floating the idea of water charges, floating the idea of increases in the household rate bills, That was then shot down by other ministers. I mean, it's a pretty chaotic picture, I think, as to what is actually happening here. And what Edwin Poots was saying yesterday will not have been popular with many of the public. But actually, even though he wasn't maybe advocating grown-up politics, he was at least starting to think about it and talk about it. It is really infantile for Stormont to be simply constantly going to London and to a lesser extent going to Dublin and saying, we need more money. We need money for this. We need money for that. And with the limited tax raising powers which Stormont has at the moment, they're refusing to use those.
Okay.
If public services need this money, it is a pretty basic principle in public spending that you raise tax and then you spend it, not the other way around.
Okay. Well, Patricia McBride, with all that in mind, were they naive?
Well, I think what we're looking here is that the parties were going into a negotiation to try and deliver a credible and sustainable agreement that would bring the Assembly back. And sustainable means that it has to be funded. And if there was no clarity, and there is no clarity at this point in time, on the actual amount of money that all of these commitments would cost, then certainly there needs to be clarity on the areas spend that will be covered. And if you look at the Annex A to the agreement, it talks about four key elements of the financial package: immediate support to the health services and to address budget pressures, investment to transform public services, turbocharging infrastructure delivery and addressing Northern Ireland's unique circumstances. Now, that's probably the list that's as long as your arm, the fourth area of financial commitment there. But the British and Irish governments wouldn't be prepared to put money in unless there was an agreement. And that's where we are at this point.
Well, could that not have been done together, Patricia? That agreement, you know, the agreement between the parties over the different terms, but also agreement with the government over that financial package, that money to help them make all these changes and reforms.
Well, it should have been, but it hasn't, and we're in the situation that we are now, which will require the executive to unite in ensuring that the issue is resolved, because, you know, that is what needs to happen in order for Stormont to function effectively. And I think that when Henry Hill talked about the parties, first on one hand laughing at the DUP for trusting the Conservative government, and then believing Boris Johnson themselves when he said that the British government would support a new deal. Well, let's remember that they didn't believe the Prime Minister alone. They also believed the Taoiseach. There were two sovereign governments involved in these negotiations. And you have to accept that the Irish government will also be lobbying on the British side to make sure that those commitments that those commitments are adhered to by Westminster, as well as having to ensure that the commitments they have made in terms of infrastructure cooperation, funding in the border regions, etc., they are delivered upon. And this is going to be imperative, because it's likely that we're going to see a general election called in Dublin in the south. So it is important that this happens in the next number of weeks and that it's not put in the long finger.
Patricia, will there be a mindset among some in Westminster that, like, we've sorted out Northern Ireland, that whole mess for the last 3 years, that's done, we can now focus on Brexit and what that means for the UK? Are we now even more on the back foot?
Well, certainly there'll be... Well, there was no imperative in the last 3 years to sort out the Assembly in any real shape or form. I mean, now, James Brokenshire and Karen Bradley made no significant efforts to do it, and it is only at this stage where we're moving into the actual Brexit date for... The British government has said, well, let's tie that off for now so that we don't have to deal with it. And you're absolutely right. I don't think there's going to be any imperative. But we have to expect that the parties here, the five parties in the executive, and we've heard Nicola Mallon and Robin Swan today talking about their financial needs in their respective departments of infrastructure and health. So we'll have to expect that all of those ministers in the executive hold the British government's feet to the fire and ensure that the Irish government act as co-guarantors of the agreement and ensure that the commitments made within it are kept.
Sam McBride, you said it's infantile in terms of this cap-in-hand approach, Stormont going back and forth to Westminster looking for more money. Over the past few years, there were lots of issues that were, you know, we talked about time and time again on this programme, the likes of Irish Language Act and those things that were redlined for different people that they wanted. So where do we go next with all that in mind?
Well, I think that one element of this deal, which hasn't got very much focus yet, and I was talking to somebody last night who was highlighting this, is that very far down in this deal, there is talk of two measures which seem to be the Treasury and the Whitehall machine stepping in to if you like, take back some power from Stormont. So yes, there is devolution here. Yes, it's the DUP and Sinn Féin and the other parties here in this executive. But actually, there is talk of a UK government NI executive joint board to look at regular reviews of UK government funding provided under this agreement, and talk of a fiscal body which will advise as to whether Stormont's finances are sustainable. And I think there are, well, I know that there are very senior civil servants in Whitehall who have been paying attention to the RHI scandal. They have been horrified at what they have heard about the culture of free money, where literally when money was being burned, where it was going up in smoke, the right-hand person to Arlene Foster thought that there really wasn't much of an issue here. There was no great urgency in bringing in cost controls. That has really alarmed them. And so therefore, if Stormont is not going to get its own house in order, and there's still a question as to whether they've really got that message here, I think with some of what's been said over the last 48 hours, there is perhaps some hope for all of us if the Treasury from its end is going to actually provide some oversight, because without an opposition in Stormont, with limited public access to some of the spending information from within Stormont, I think that if the Treasury doesn't look at this, who there is safeguarding the public interest, who is actually deciding whether this is money that needs to be spent, and some of it clearly does need to be spent, particularly in the health service, and some of this other spending, which probably is not in the public interest, or at least there are question marks around that. So that potentially is quite a positive thing from the public's point of view, but it might not be a positive thing from Stormont's point of view in terms of easily getting big sums out of the Treasury.
Sam McBride and Patricia McBride, thank you both very much.